So the first question, should I feel smashed during meditation or refreshed? Is it just the heating? Smashed. I don't think I ever felt smashed during meditation. I felt agitated. I felt sleepy. I felt excited. I felt bored. I think you can expect to feel almost anything at all during meditation. What's important is to notice what you're feeling. If you feel refreshed, that's wonderful. If you can do the jhanas, it may bring a refreshed feeling to you, and then again it may not. Quite often at the beginning of a retreat, what you feel is tired and sleepy. The lives we lead in the real world, or is it the unreal world, tend to be very busy, and we often arrive at a retreat rather tired. And so the first few days of a retreat, there may be what seems like an extraordinary amount of tiredness. That will probably go away. There are also mental states brought on by the things that come up when we're distracted. You know, we sit there, we try and watch the breath, and we wander off into something. The things we wander off into do have an effect on us. If there are things that are unpleasant, they may contribute to a feeling of tiredness. If there are things that we wander off into that are exciting, it may contribute to a feeling of excitement. The most important thing is to realize what you are feeling. You don't have to feel any particular way. Now, if you're feeling so sleepy that you're actually falling asleep in the meditation, that's not particularly useful, and you should do something about it. The first thing you should do if you're feeling sleepy is open your eyes and look at the brightest light you can see. So look at the windows, okay? Just stare at a brighter light. That will help alleviate the sleepiness. You can give yourself a pep talk. You can try and boost your energy by saying things like, now is the time to meditate, not the time to sleep. I'm paying good money to do this. I can sleep at home for free. I should try and stay awake. That may or may not work, but it's worth a try. Another thing you can do is pinch your earlobes very tightly and pull down. This will tend to bring blood to your head. If you have more blood in your head, it may help you stay awake. If all else fails, you can stand up. I have never seen anyone fall asleep standing up in a meditation hall. Okay? You can do standing meditation. You stand in a position that's fairly comfortable. You do not lock your knees, okay? So your knees are slightly flexed, okay? And you stand, you can put your hands behind you and clasp them together, in front of you, clasp together, or let them just dangle at your side, and watch yourself breathe, or do whatever form of meditation you want. So, if you're feeling sleepy, look at the light, give yourself a pep talk, pinch and pull your earlobes, and if all else fails, stand up. I want to ask about walking meditation. Is it only for a break? If not, why and how? Walking meditation is not only for a break. It does give you a break. It gives you a chance to put your body in a different posture so that your knees and your back can actually have a bit of a change. However, The sitting meditation is about as far as you can get from being mindful in everyday life. The walking meditation is more like what we do in our everyday lives. We're actually doing something, and while we're doing the walking meditation, we have an opportunity to be mindful. We're not doing something very strenuous. We're walking back and forth very slowly. There are no decisions to be made. You delineate before you start walking. This is where I start. This is where I turn around. So you don't have to decide. You just have to notice when you get to those points. And yet, it's not easy to be mindful, I think you've probably discovered. So it's a chance to practice being mindful while doing a bit more than just sitting. It does indeed give a nice break from sitting. Now, the way I've structured this retreat, there's not a lot of time for walking meditation. There's 15 minutes between the two sittings before breakfast. I felt it would be cruel to get you up any earlier and make that period a longer walking meditation. So there's a nice 45-minute walking period before this. In the afternoon, the way the schedule is written, there are 15-minute periods between 45-minute sittings. I have said before that this is a very ambitious schedule. It's a very full schedule. There are lots of sitting periods. In the afternoon, if you don't want to sit for 45-minute sitting periods, you can make longer walking periods by walking during one or more of the sitting periods. Okay? You can walk for 45 minutes. You can walk for an hour and 15 minutes. Okay? You can sit for 45 minutes, and then when the bell rings for walking, you can keep sitting so that you have an hour-long sitting, and then go walk for 45 minutes or an hour. It's just up to you to do whatever you want to do, keeping in mind that you only want to enter and leave the meditation hall at quarter past and at the top of the hour. Okay? Once you're in here between quarter past and the top of the hour, you're in here to meditate. You're in here to make the atmosphere quiet for all of the other students. What is the difference between walking meditation and just being aware of one's movements, as one does in the Feldenkrais method, for example? Well, I'm not very familiar with the Feldenkrais method, but there's not really much difference at all between walking meditation and just being aware of one's movements. The only difference with the walking meditation is that it's a very artificial setup. You have 15 to 20 meters that you're walking back and forth. All of the movement that you're doing is walking, reaching the end, turning around, walking again. If you are being aware of your movements in general, then you are in general doing more than just simply walking back and forth, and I would say that's really the only difference. The qualitative difference of awareness isn't there. There is none. Whether you are being aware of eating or brushing your teeth or taking a shower in the morning or washing dishes while you're doing your job or chopping vegetables or doing walking meditation, the quality of awareness is the same. You might actually investigate this. Do your walking meditation, and after you feel like you're getting into it, look at awareness itself. What does the awareness feel like? What does it feel like to notice what's going on? And then when you're doing your job, chopping your vegetables, washing your dishes, or whatever. Look at the awareness in that. Is there really any difference in the quality of the awareness, or is it just the content of the awareness that has changed? So, an additional little homework assignment. But the answer to this question is no, there's not really any difference, other than you're doing, in walking meditation, a very restricted form of movement. And then this last question, or series of questions. Kindly comment on, when concentrating on the nose breath, can one think in, out? Yes, you can use that if you wish. Over the course of this retreat, I would suggest, though, that you begin to phase that out. You let go of thinking in, out. That as you get started into the meditation, you may find that you want to do in, out. You may want to do it for entire sittings, yesterday and today. I would say starting tomorrow, maybe you do in, out at the beginning of a sitting, and then let go of these little help things. The idea is to notice the physical sensation of breathing to the best of your ability, to just notice it. It is good if you can stay with the breath. It is not, you have not failed if you do not stay with the breath. Okay, if your mind wanders off, well, actually that's to be expected. Much as the ear hears sounds, the mind thinks thoughts. You could close your eyes and not see, but it's very difficult to close your ears and not hear. It's just as difficult to close your mind and not think, or to put your focus someplace and not be distracted. It's a very difficult thing to do. So although the instructions are to simply watch the breath, your mind will wander off. It's not a big deal. That's just what happens. And you put a label on where you went, and you come back, or you just come back to the breath. It's a matter. The meditation is actually more about coming back, about recognizing that you've become distracted and coming back, than it is actually staying on the breath. Now, eventually you will get to the place where you can stay on the breath, and that's wonderful. But that takes a while. And if you're not there, then the real trick is to notice that you've wandered off and come back. The next part of the question, can this focusing produce neck tension, suffering, and what does it mean? If you're getting neck tension or pain, it means that you're holding your neck too stiff. Okay? I would say you need to adjust your posture. You know, it could be you have your head a bit forward, your body a bit forward. Okay? If you're forward, you're going to have some pain. If you're back, if you're tilted to one side or the other. So if you're producing pain in the upper part of the back or the neck, then you need to find an adjustment to your posture that doesn't produce this pain. You should not be getting pain there. Should not. It's not common that people get pain there. Sometimes you do. But you should be able to adjust your posture in such a way that it's not a problem. If you are sitting, leaning against something, then you may have your head tilted forward, okay? And now it would be more likely to produce pain in the neck. If you put all the attention in the lower back, the upper back will take care of itself, and then you won't have a pain in the neck, you'll have a pain in the back. But you can learn to sit so that there's no pain in the back as well, hopefully. In such case, can one shift to the belly button? Can you shift your attention to watching yourself breathe in the belly? I would say that you need to decide where you're going to watch the breath. When you sit down, you get into your comfortable, upright, alert meditation posture. You need to decide, I'm going to watch the breath in the nose, I'm going to watch the breath in the heart, I'm going to watch the breath in the belly. And then you watch it there. If it just gets too maddeningly frustrating to watch it in the place you've chosen and you want to switch, you can switch. But don't go, oh, okay, I'm going to watch it in my nose. 5 minutes later, it's not working, I'm going to watch it in my belly. This is not working either, I think I'll watch it in my chest. Maybe it worked better in the nose. No. Okay. You want to decide where you want to watch it. By tomorrow, you should have settled on one place and always watch it there. Okay? No place is easy. All places are difficult. The mind will wander off. Doesn't matter actually how easy it is to sense the breath. The mind is going to wander off. By watching it in the nose, the one advantage is that when you learn to do it, you will be more concentrated, simply because it's harder to do. Conversely, by watching it in the belly or in the chest, it's easier to do, and you'll meet with what you think is success quicker. But you won't be able to as easily generate the deep concentration. But it's up to you to decide. My personal recommendation is the inside of the nose. And then if one has shifted one's attention to the belly button, what if the image of a lotus flower appears there? Well, you notice that you are hallucinating a lotus flower. It's a very nice image to have appear, okay? It's quite beautiful. But there really is no lotus flower there, okay? It's something that you have created, perhaps unintentionally, in your mind, okay? These things happen all the time, particularly when you first start meditating. If this is your first course, you may find that quite frequently you suddenly get very interesting or bizarre images suddenly filling your mind. The mind has gotten quiet. The mind has gotten into a place that it has never really been before. And it doesn't know what to do, so it starts throwing up whatever it thinks it can throw up. You know? Hey, try this on. Let's have some purple cows and, a green sun or whatever. Notice that the mind is now throwing up interesting images. You can label it hallucinating or interesting or whatever. They will probably pass fairly quickly. The same images may come back again, though much more likely your mind will dream up new and even more fascinating images. It really is unimportant, you know. You just notice that they're there, don't give them any energy, and go on. They will probably continue to show up off and on throughout your meditation career, but they don't really mean much. What about feeling two or three types of breath at once, or as leading from one to the other? There are meditation techniques where you feel the breath come in the nose, you feel it go all the way down into the belly, and you watch it all come out. I do not recommend that you do these unless you have had experience doing them before and you feel really comfortable with it. It's much better to watch it in one place, to stay at that one location for the entire length of a sitting. If your mind is running around like this, it's just a little bit too frenetic. It's more artificial. It may be easier to stay with the breath, but as I said, staying with the breath, as good as it is not really the whole point. It's important to know when you're distracted and come back. That's actually more important than staying with the breath. The advantage of staying with the breath is that you get very concentrated. You can perhaps enter into the first jhana. But if you are trying to follow your breath all over the place, or watching it in the nose, in the in-breath, and in the belly on the out-breath, you're going to be moving your attention too much to get concentrated. So I don't think that's a very useful thing to do. And the rest of the questions are about moving, various techniques of moving the breath and so forth. So I would say pick a place, the nose, the chest, the heart, and just watch the breath there. And when your mind drifts off, well, put a label on it, bring it back. The technique is quite simple. It's just really hard to do. It just comes down to that. And then the last question, can you speak about the sweeping technique sometime? Well, since that's what I was going to talk about as the meditation instructions today, that's what we will do. Before I do that, are there any questions that have come up because of the questions I have been answering? Yes. The only way to fully stop craving is to become fully enlightened. Okay? So to answer your question, become totally enlightened, and then you can come sit up here and teach the course. What you have done is the correct thing to do, is to notice that you are now craving something, to notice that on the thinking level there really isn't any craving, that I really don't want it, but there is something deeper inside of me that does want it. Something more at an unconscious level, perhaps, or something at a very deep, hidden emotional level. Something that you aren't quite sure of. It's the act of noticing this craving. Noticing everything you can about the craving. Seeing if you can find why you're craving it. It doesn't matter whether you find it, but if you can see why, that's quite useful at times. But as for actually turning off the craving, well, it doesn't really go away until you're totally enlightened. It will lessen over time by just simply doing the practice, by understanding the teaching, by attending retreat after retreat after retreat, by reading books and getting an understanding of what's going on. But more by anything else, simply examining the craving when it arises. Seeing when it arises, seeing what triggers it, noticing that the trigger is simply a trigger. It's not really important in itself. And just trying to understand, why did this craving arise? What is it about? What's going on? It's more of an examination. But as for the switch to turn it off, I wish I knew. I really wish I knew. Yes. Exactly. If you take the deep breath, you actually disturb your concentration. You lower the level of concentration so that you no longer quite have the access to the jhana. So instead of taking the deep breath, forget about the breath completely. You will keep breathing. Okay? It doesn't feel like you're breathing, but the air is still coming in and out. It's coming very subtly, and you shift your attention completely to a pleasant sensation. Yeah, this is very tricky. As I said, I'm crazy to try and teach this because it's very, very subtle. It's very difficult. And you will need a good bit of time to play with it. Before you get to the when the breath gets quiet and before it gets to the place where you have this automatic urge to take a deep breath, but when you notice that it's getting quiet, okay, but not so quiet as that you feel you have to have a deeper breath, at that point, look to see if you can find a pleasant sensation. Okay? Because the urge for the deep breath seems to be automatic, if you run it too close to it, it will come on its own and disturb your concentration. So you need to look perhaps a little bit earlier. Or you can play with just not taking that breath, you know, just staying in that place. Both of those are useful. I would say at first try seeing a bit earlier, you know, when it's quiet, if you can find a pleasant sensation that you can focus on and let go of the breath completely. Okay? What may happen is that your breathing gets a little bit more. Or what may happen is that the urge for the deep breath comes and you take the deep breath. If you can still stay with the pleasant sensation, that's the thing to do. Okay? If you don't take the deep breath, it will be easier to stay with the pleasant sensation. The taking of the deep breath disturbs the level of concentration. Taking a deep breath seems to bring in a large amount of oxygen into the system. And it's like you get that flood of oxygen in there and the mind now has oxygen and it's ready to, okay, I'm ready to think. And it runs off and starts thinking. Okay. Now, my description of it is at a much grosser level than actually occurs. In other words, you've gotten to this very, very quiet state. You suddenly get more air in, more oxygen. You've shifted your level of concentration just slightly. And it seems that the mind just is not quite as steady. It's like it's gotten a bit excited. It's gotten a drug, oxygen. And it's gotten just a little bit more excited. So it won't quite as easily stay locked into one position. I think that's what's going on. I'll have to examine it a bit more next time I get a chance and see if I can tell you. But thinking back on it, the trick is to get the mind very quiet and then shift to a pleasant sensation. The breathing getting quiet is a sign that your mind has gotten quiet. If you know your mind has gotten quiet, regardless of what the sign is, then you can shift to the pleasant sensation. But if you're getting to the point where there's an automatic need to take a breath, try shifting a bit earlier, or play with defeating the automatic need. You know, just sit there and see what it's like to not breathe. You know, you will be breathing very subtly. You can stay in that position for quite some time. So, somebody back here had a question?
A comment.
Yes.
As you guide getting to the jhana, just as Austin describes the retreat, the 3 months retreat was, he mentioned 150 participants, and he said at the end of it, only a handful of people had got to the first jhana. So to try and do it in 4 days is really just a weak attempt.
Yes.
One shouldn't have an exaggerated expectation to put it in.
Exactly. However, it's possible in 4 days. As I said, this is only the fourth retreat I've taught. I taught one at Gaia House back in October. There were 30-something students, and at that retreat, maybe a half dozen people got into the first jhana for the very first time. There were some students that had had previous experience, but it's possible. The other two retreats I've taught have been for more advanced students, so the numbers would be rather skewed. These were people that had done a number of retreats, and the retreat was advertised as a jhana retreat. But on those retreats, one was 1 week, one was 10 days, over half the people got into at least the first jhana. So it's possible, but it's quite difficult. It's not an easy thing to do. And if you hope to get into the jhana, wish to get into the jhana, expect to get into the jhana, it won't work. When you get to that quiet state, what will be happening is you're wishing, you're hoping, you're expecting, and you'll be too disturbed to actually get in. It's a very subtle, tricky thing to do. But you're right, it's quite rare that people get in, though not as rare as you would imagine. So there were other questions. Yes?
Going back to the lady who asked the question before, I tried moving before I had to take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept feeling the breath really strongly wherever I moved to, and a pleasant sensation. It was like you said, it got stronger.
Mm-hmm.
The breath got stronger than it was, and it was stronger than the sensation.
Right. Which means you move too early. Okay? The breath has to get pretty quiet so that you can totally ignore it, which is a difficult thing to do because your whole training has been to pay attention to the breath. And here I'm telling you, do just the opposite. Once it's gotten pretty quiet, and if the pleasant sensation is strong enough, if you can focus on it as intensely, then you can ignore the breath. But it's tricky. What is needed is a great deal of concentration. The sign that you have a great deal of concentration is that the breath has gotten quiet. However, once it gets quiet, there is this urge to get some air because I've stopped breathing. It's a very narrow little opening we're trying to squeeze through. So, yeah. I would say, in your particular case, to stay with the breath longer and let it get quieter before you shift to a pleasant sensation. And then, focusing on a pleasant sensation is more difficult than focusing on the breath. The breath is a lot going on. You know, it starts to come in, it comes in, it begins to slow down, it stops. It starts to go out, it goes out, it begins to slow down, it stops. You know, it's like 8 different things you can pick out. Watching a pleasant sensation, there's just a pleasant sensation. At first, that's all there is. It's not growing, it's not changing. But luckily, we have the fact that everything changes on our side, and it will either get stronger or weaker. And so what you want to do is watch that pleasant sensation to see how is it going to change. If you can watch it intensely enough, it will actually get stronger. Yes? Right. It temporarily suspends the craving for a new car, say. Okay? If you're concentrating on the breath and you're really right there, the craving for the new car or the perfect relationship or the nice new furniture or a new TV or whatever you're craving is temporarily suspended. Wanting to get into the jhanas, Okay? Yes, you have now substituted some other wanting there. And if you want it too strongly, you will not be able to get in. The first insight that happens when you begin practicing the jhanas, actually getting in, it becomes so obvious that all you do is sit there and watch the pleasant sensation. That's it. Any wanting it to turn into the first jhana shuts it off. Brings suffering. I didn't get the jhana I wanted. Okay? And so, I mean, it took me many, many, many months, probably a year and a half, to actually fully understand that. And I'm getting into the jhanas on a fairly regular basis, like once a week. And it took that long to actually see, believe it myself, fully understand it, that wanting the jhana to arise at the point where I shifted my attention to a pleasant sensation, that wanting was counterproductive, that it actually inhibited the jhana from arising, and that all that was necessary was simply to watch the pleasant sensation. Now, there has to be some wanting to come on a meditation retreat, to come into the meditation hall and sit down in what is probably not the most comfortable position you'll be in all day, and do this practice that's rather difficult to do. When I was at Wat Suan Mok in southern Thailand, they spoke about wise wishes and foolish desires. Okay? So there is an urge to make things happen, to have things arise that are wise. Wanting to understand things as they are is a wise wish. Wanting your friend to be happy is a wise wish. Even wanting your enemy to be happy is a wise wish. But it's not an easy thing to do. Wanting a new car, wanting a new television, well, probably is a foolish desire. You'll have to decide for yourself. In all of the Buddha's teaching, it finally comes back to you having to decide the difference between wise wishes and foolish desires. Teachings that are true and teachings that are false or not useful or whatever. I put out all this stuff here. Just because I get to sit in the front of the room doesn't mean I know what's going on. You are the ones who are ultimately responsible for the decision as to whether what I'm saying is true and useful. Okay? Not because I come from California. That doesn't give me any authority at all. Yes. Right.
Just the process, human tendency to. And now you're saying that there's wise craving.
If you wish to grow spiritually and you do the right things and you do it with an attitude of, well, I'm going to do the best I can and we'll see what happens, then the amount of craving that generates suffering in there can be fairly small. Okay? If you do it with the attitude of, well, I need to grow spiritually, I'm going to do this meditation practice, I'm going to be on the breath, I'm not going to drift off, and then you get upset by the fact you drift off. There is some teaching on the attachment to the outcome of actions. The more attached we are to the outcome of our action, the more likely there is going to be suffering. The guideline I can give is you do the right thing and don't worry about the outcome. You do it to the best of your ability and you don't worry about the outcome. I remember when I finally fully understood this teaching. It was back during the Persian Gulf War in 1990-91. Okay? And in San Francisco, we had a peace march. I mean, San Francisco is well known for peace marches, and I went on this peace march, and it was really wonderful, you know, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000 people, and we all were saying, we want peace. And then afterwards, I was talking with someone, and the person said, but yeah, George Bush is not going to pay any attention to you. There's not a chance, not a prayer, that a peace march in San Francisco is going to affect whether there's a war in the Persian Gulf or not. And I thought about it, and I said, yes, but it was the right thing to do. Whether it has any effect on George Bush or not doesn't matter. What matters was it was the right thing to do. Working on yourself to grow spiritually is the right thing to do. The amount of attachment you have to actually growing is going to determine how much suffering arises. If you can do this practice, do it to the absolute best of your ability and not worry about what happens, just let whatever happens happen, then that will be the way that will produce the most growth with the least amount of pain. But it seems that we are always going to have some pain brought on by our grasping, no matter how wise our grasping is, until we're totally enlightened. And since very, very few people actually manage to make it to totally enlightened, perhaps the best we can hope for, at least at the beginning, is some reduction in the amount of suffering that we have, because we will have some reduction in the amount of grasping that we engage in. Yes?
I found that the breath became very, very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself looking for this pleasant sensation.
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't any specific pleasant sensation in my body. If anything, it was a little bit more pain than there was pleasant sensation. And so got a little bit wrapped up in, well, I don't have this pleasant sensation to go to, now what? But found that the second or third time this happened, and this is what I'm checking out with you, that just the breath being quiet was the pleasant sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And just stayed there.
If you...
Then was able to not, and then just let my focus, my attention go from following the breath in the nose, and just was in the pleasant sensation of the quiet breath. Is that...
Any pleasant sensation that you can stay with will work if you can stay with it long enough. Okay? The one you've picked is kind of tricky because you're likely to drift off into watching the breathing. Okay?
Oh, okay. Because what happened was not able to find a specific...
Yeah.
And just remaining in the pleasant sensation created by this quietness of breath, I found that I could be there for a bit without going back to following the breath. But what did eventually happen, of course, was small things of mine started coming up, and then, of course, had to go back to following the breath.
Right. Probably would be more helpful if you have a stronger pleasant sensation. And that's difficult. I mean, if you find one, that's great. As I said, you can smile. You might just smile to yourself the fact that you've achieved this place where the breath is quiet and it feels pleasant. And then you might put your attention on the physical aspects of the smile. You know, you feel the muscles that are pulling it up. And it just watch that. It may actually generate a bit more pleasant feeling. It's not uncommon that people get to the very quiet breath and then they go to look for a pleasant sensation and it's not one. This happens, okay? And it happens the first time and the second time and the third time and the fourth time, and then over time, generally people do discover that there is some pleasant sensation somewhere. And then they can focus on it. And if you can stay focused on it long enough, then the first jhana will arise. But yeah, if you get to that quiet space and there's no pleasant sensation, it's quite difficult. The fact that you can find the pleasantness of the quiet space is good. But that's pretty nebulous. It's not something you can actually look directly at. One thing you might try, and this I would put this out for everyone, is do some loving kindness meditation at the very start of your sitting. You know, give some love to yourself, give some love to people that you're close to. You know, if you want to do a more elaborate, longer one and give it to your acquaintances and your enemies and everybody on the planet, that's fine. But at least give some love to yourself, and maybe give some love to people that you're close to. This will tend to open your heart up a bit more. And having an open heart will tend to put you in a space where perhaps it will be easier for a pleasant sensation to arise. A lot of people find that they have a pleasant sensation in their heart. So if you do the metta practice, the loving kindness practice first, then that may generate a pleasant sensation here. As a matter of fact, doing the metta practice is an excellent way to generate very strong concentration. If you want to play with doing this practice, what you would do would be decide before you sit down, I'm going to practice metta for this sitting, and just do basically guide yourself through what I guided you through the last two nights, or if you have some other way that you know of doing the metta practice, do it that way. But make sure that you send love especially to yourself. Send love to the people you're close to, your acquaintances, your enemies, and then to all categories of beings, starting with the people in the room and spreading outwards, or you could send it to all males, all females, all animals, all birds, all fish, whatever categories, how you want to divide it up, so that you're eventually sending it to everyone. Most important, come back to yourself to finish it. Okay? And you could spend a half an hour doing that if you want. After you've come back to yourself and you're sending love to yourself, then you can shift your attention to the breath and see if it's quiet. You may not even need to switch your attention to the breath. You may already find that you're very quiet and there is a pleasant sensation that you can focus on. And if so, focus on the pleasantness of that pleasant sensation and just watch it. Don't try and make a change. Okay, why don't we stand up for...